Welcome to Shortcut to Sunday. I'm Ben.
And I'm Bruce.
And this is your podcast for August 27th, 2023, the 13th Sunday after Pentecost and year A. And we are coming to you not live on behalf of Holy Family Episcopal Church in Fishers, Indiana. Bruce, welcome back. How are you?
I am great.
I'm good.
Anticipatorily hot, but I am great. It's a heat wave this week.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
It hasn't quite started.
I thought you had delved into some lack of modesty and just full of yourself. Like, I, as anticipated, am hot. I mean, I just want you to know it.
No.
Oh, well, that's too bad. You should feel that way. I mean, like, I feel like everyone should feel that way at least once in their life. Mine was many years ago.
Yeah, I think I remember the 30 minutes or so.
There was like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
My post high school gawkiness, and then my early, like, so probably somewhere right there in like the first 10 minutes of married life.
Yeah.
I was like, all the stress had melted away any extra pounds, but I was no longer a teenager. Mm-hmm. And then we were married and we ate well, and that was the end of it.
No one looked at you again.
No one looked at me ever again. But yeah, so I mean, shoot, August 27th, you and I were both gone last week. So yep. Apologies to our listeners. I did record a 45 second apology note, and broadcast that. So, I know that if you were looking for something, to entertain you last week, it was not our podcast, and I apologize for that. But we are happy to be back. And yeah. As I said on that recording, it doesn't really happen very often. It happens about once a year where we just can't quite get a schedule to align, and that's okay. I had thoughts of getting other people to join, but those possibilities kind of fell through, and it just couldn't happen.
Yeah, that's real life.
It is. So apologies. 2023 will be only 51 episodes instead of 52.
Let me insert here. Ben is a volunteer.
That's true.
So, you know, it's not like, hey, you didn't put in for vacation.
I get paid in dark roast coffee.
Yes.
And you should know, everyone listening should know, it is crippling our budget. But
I hate to think how old that supply of dark roast
and I'm sure it's sealed. I'm sure it's fine. yeah. So if I get sick later, you'll know it's the, it's the dark roast coffee. But yeah, we're both back. We're both, ready for action. And speaking of, as far as the church goes, that's kind of where we are finding ourselves.
Yeah.
August 27th isn't, the return to our normal programming, but it's right around the corner. So September 10th.
We do have programming.
We do this coming Sunday. We have an 11:30 town hall meeting.
Yep.
To discuss the use of the land that God has seen fit to bless us, and mm-hmm. Then God has seen fit to have the town of Fishers put a trail right beside it. There's a lot of exciting opportunity, I think, as a result for that. Communal creation opportunity is the way that I see it. Others see it as a potential to foist the grounds portion of our caretaking on maybe a corporation and get them to you do this. But you know,
interesting perspective.
There's a lot of ways to look at it. So we are having a town hall meeting next Sunday after the 10 o'clock service to discuss those opportunities, somewhat to get on the same page, and I think somewhat to maybe even begin to express some ideas as to like things that we would want to see as part of this program.
It's mostly to get everyone caught up.
Okay. Yeah.
Because we are starting. Well, we haven't started yet, but we are getting ready to start working with the construction people, the design people, not the construction people, about what we want and all that.
Right.
So it's we want to get everyone caught up on what we know so far.
Yeah.
So then as we enter into new ground, everyone's caught up.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So that is it, which is for me the exciting part. I have a sister in design. This would be her favorite thing.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it when we went through the design phase, or the planning phase for our building expansion. That was a lot of fun. So this is the fun time before the headache time of, well, that didn't quite work out. They don't have that anymore. They don't make it
right,
that way anymore.
They don't make that anymore.
But I suppose it'll, and the long and short of it is that's going to be their problem.
But it
is really exciting. So come find out where we're at. We also have a lot of things coming up.
For sure.
We just started, we had a nice announcement in church, today about the return of the, I'm trying to remember what name Joel has given it, but,
Music and meditation.
Joel, is a fantastic, caretaker of this program, designer and caretaker.
Yeah.
This idea of being able to listen to more secular music, but find a place of worship somewhere inside it or meditation somewhere inside it. So that starts up again. And that is not this coming Sunday, but the Sunday after that on September 3rd.
Yeah. The day before Labor Day.
Yep. September 1st. So not this Friday, but next is another game night. They're a little closer this month because we had to scoot back the one after Gen Con a week. So another opportunity there.
Are there going to be Gen Con products at this game night, or do you know yet?
I don't know yet. I didn't pick up very many. I picked up one, and it's not really a board game design. It's one that I picked up to do with the family. It's a murder mystery in a box.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, which is really cool. So that one won't play so well on a Friday night, but I'm hoping some other folks will bring some stuff. I know there are some serious board gamers that come periodically, and there was plenty of playtesting going on at Gen Con. I didn't have time to actually engage in it, but it was really cool.
Just put a little bug in your ear of maybe it'd be fun to have a murder mystery night at church.
That would be fun. Maybe not the one that I bought is a series, and I bought the easy one to see if the kids would get
I'm
into
sold.
It. Yeah, there you go. But it would be fun to maybe do one of the hard ones. And then have like teams and
yeah,
like, you know what I mean?
Thinking.
That would be kind of, that would be kind of fun. But, at the very least for game night, you can guarantee that the people who do come will bring a standard games. I'm sure that there will be a Ticket to Ride there almost always is. I always bring Space Base and Trogdor
and Ticket to Ride, by the way, is a railroad game, not a Beatles game.
That's true. But very much up your alley, right? I
actually have a copy of it at home now.
There you go. So we've got that. We've got choir starting up this week.
Thursday.
As this broadcast releases, this Thursday at 7. You don't have to be a music major or have a doctorate in whatever or have a vast amount of singing experience. All you really have to have is the desire to participate.
Yeah.
If you want to come and check it out, you're certainly welcome to. We don't make you sign a contract and stay. I promise I will attend. So that's not the thing. It is very much a gathering of people who just enjoy music.
And if you only want to sing on the big festive days or whatever, your voice could be used.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for
however sure. Fits your time,
so,
go for it.
So come visit us and participate that way. And then we also have I think the other thing that I would point out is the ministry fair, which is the 17th. What's the date for that?
You're the one pointing it out.
I know, and I don't have the... visit our website at holyfamilyfishers.org for our ministry to find out more about the ministry fair. I know that's coming up. I don't think it's the back to programming Sunday. And so I have have a
it
feeling.
Might be.
Is it one and the same? I know I have at least one more week to get it right and plug it properly. as Bruce looks for it, I will say it is on our website.
Definitely on our website.
Go there or contact us at hfec.org. Admin would be more than willing to take questions, or you can email shortcut@hfec and ask those kinds of things. We'd be happy to respond back to you and get you some information on it. But that is coming. Music ministry on or the what man I've already forgotten the words the ministry fair. So that we can demonstrate the different ways that individuals can plug in here at the parish. So without any further ado, let's move over to this day in church history. It is kind of funny. We said before we started broadcasting how we made a comment how short the different readings are this week. And we actually have a short list of events this day in church history. So August 27th in church history. Sees only, what is that, 5 entries.
Wow.
And it's relatively short. Sometimes usually
Christianity was on vacation.
I know.
Not.
Don't tempt fate. events in Christianity aren't always the best.
True.
We need more entries on this page. Oh no. They did what?
Get up.
They said what? Oh, goodness. Anyways.
Out the martyrdom tools.
Right. So our first entry comes from 1521. We see the death of Joaquin Desprez, a Flemish composer, transitional between the Middle Ages and the Renaissance, who'd written a large number of religious works. I'm not familiar with Desprez.
They were really stretching even to get
this. I know. The name does sound familiar, actually, but... but I can't place any works that I might recognize of Desprez. So there you go. That's as much as I got on that. 1820, we see.
I like Flemish painting.
Yes, I do too. And
I can't say I know of any Renaissance Flemish music. So
I mean, I suppose I wouldn't. I'm not as much music is in my life, I don't know as if I'd be able to tell you the difference between any kind of, like, I'd be able to say, like, oh, that sounds older and more Renaissance-like, but I wouldn't be able to tell you.
Oh, that's Flemish.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to tell you, like, oh, that's clearly, you know, Austrian, or this one's French for sure. I'm not that kind. I could go, I like that one. And that's about it. That's about as good as I can do.
You can tap your foot and dance to it.
Yeah, there you go.
Does it say what he wrote?
Just composer.
Okay. Maybe it was, you know, commercial jingles.
Yeah. Come on down to the Flemish dentist. Come on down.
Our grog is the finest.
1820, we see the conversion of Joseph Tarkington, who will become a Methodist circuit rider and grandfather of the novelist Booth Tarkington.
Oh.
So.
Doesn't she have an Indianapolis connection?
Sure. Totally. Connected in sometime in the 1800s to Indiana somehow. Let's see here. Booth Tarkington, an American novelist and dramatist best known for his novels, The Magnificent Ambersons and Alice Adams.
Born in Indianapolis.
There you go. Oh, here you go. During the first quarter of the 20th century, Tarkington, along with Meredith Nicholson, George Ade, and James Whitcomb Riley, helped to create a golden age of literature in Indiana, which probably wasn't hard.
Wow. These words are spelled correctly.
I do like how them words look on pages. Boy, that was terrible of me. Here's some information though that is interesting. Yes, you're right. You're right. There is an Indiana connection for sure. Not just was he born here in Indianapolis and died here, so he lived here his entire life. He died in 1946. Booth Tarkington served one term in the Indiana House of Representatives, which I didn't know.
I think that was back when so few people lived here that if you had any kind of degree above high school, you had to serve at least one term.
Yeah, was it like required? Yeah.
You had to take a turn at it.
So there you go. Joseph Tarkington is converted and becomes a Methodist. There you go.
So wind me back, because I'm now all hung up on Booth.
Yeah.
Who is it we're remembering?
Joseph Tarkington, Booth Tarkington's grandfather.
Oh, grandfather. Okay.
And his grandfather becomes a Methodist circuit rider.
Well, that's all they had then.
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of clergy.
Right, right. Yeah, traveling clergy. And yeah. Huh? 1830.
And so the minister's son became a judge.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just looking at the Wikipedia on Booth.
Cool. 1837, we see the baptism of Ganga Narayan Sil.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. What year, again, Grandpa Tarkington?
1820.
Okay. For a while, the family did really well and became a patrician family of Indiana, but they lost their fortune in the panic of 1873.
Oh.
And so kind of had to restart.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right.
Yeah, okay.
We're moving on from the Tarkingtons?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'll close the window on my brother.
1837, the baptism of Ganga Narayan Sil, a learned convert from Hinduism who would become a street preacher to Hindus and Muslims alike. 1926, Soviets sentence Ivan Sergeyevich Antonov, an Orthodox priest. They're going to sentence him to 3 years of exile. He'll be released in 3 years later in 1929, but 8 years later in 1937, he'll be rearrested for anti-Soviet agitation. And that's in quotation marks, of course, that would be it depends, you know, anti-Soviet agitation is in the eye of the beholder. And
at that point, the beholder would have been Joseph Stalin.
Yes. And at that time, subsequently, he's shot for it instead.
Yes.
So unfortunately, that is our gruesome entry for the day. And then our last entry comes from 1937. Evelyn Letourneau buys the property, which will later become Camp Bethel. So
I wonder where that is.
Looks like Texas.
Okay.
Let's look it up real quick. This Camp Bethel is in Haddam, Connecticut. But the entry, this is interesting. The entry comes from, maybe that's just, that's the address of the printer. That's, who cares? This comes from book Silhouettes, Women Behind Great Men. Camp Bethel, I wonder, let's see here. If I do Camp Bethel.
Add her name.
Letourneau. It is. Goodness. Somewhere. Connecticut. It does look like Connecticut. Is the Connecticut one.
Bethel at one point was an extremely popular name.
Yeah.
For all sorts of Christian institutions and churches.
Yeah. The related searches here on the site is Camp Bethel, Letourneau, Indiana, Letourneau, Ohio, Letourneau, South Dakota.
No.
And it's like, okay, I don't know.
Enough.
You know what? We're going to rewrite history. She buys the property that becomes all of the Camp Bethels. All of them. All of them. Single purchase.
Packs them up into big crates and mails them.
Right. Wildly disparate jurisdictions. But she buys us. It's a single deed purchase across multiple states. No. I don't know. So that would have been, you know, nice to know. Which one? Which Camp Bethel? I'm assuming the original one and the main one that seems to be popping up in the Google search is Connecticut. But I don't have I don't have the time, and I think our listeners might not have the patience to wait for for all of that.
I don't think anyone cares anymore.
Yep. Nope.
Who's involved with this podcast.
Yep. Nope. Absolutely. So let's move on to our readings today. And again, as I mentioned, our short readings for the day. No one will be nodding off to sleep as we read. The first one comes from maybe they will
later.
You will. Challenge extended and accepted. Our first reading comes from Isaiah chapter 51, verse 1 through 6. Listen to me, you that pursue righteousness, you that seek the Lord. Look to the rock from which you were hewn and to the quarry from which you were dug. Look to Abraham, your father, and to Sarah, who bore you. For he was but one when I called him, but I blessed him and made him many. For the Lord will comfort Zion. He will comfort all her waste places and will make her wilderness like Eden, her desert like the garden of the Lord. Joy and gladness will be found in her, thanksgiving and the voice of song. Listen to me, my people, and give heed to me, my nation, for a teaching will go out from me and my justice for a light to the peoples. I will bring my deliverance swiftly. My salvation has gone out, and my arms will rule the peoples. The coastlands wait for me, and for my arm they hope. Lift your eyes to the heavens and look at the earth beneath, for the heavens will vanish like smoke. The earth will wear out like a garment, and those who live on it will die like gnats. But my salvation will be forever, and my deliverance will never be ended. Isaiah 51, second Isaiah?
Third.
Okay. Well, this one felt a little bit more second-ish.
Yeah. But it's addressing the dynamics around, okay, we're getting there, getting back to the promised land.
Gotcha.
And you guys are being jerks about it.
This is the first time that, we have a lot of imagery in Old Testament and a little bit new, but I feel like common imagery of coming from being a tree, a lot of plant life, coming from the earth maybe. This is kind of at least the first time in my memory that it's like that we use a rock. So some quarry wording here, which is stands out to me as maybe not unique, but uncommon. This is definitely kind of different to me. So why do you have any ideas to why? Why this imagery?
My facetious thing is, when they got back to the Holy Land, all they saw were rocks. Things were in very
maybe
poor condition. So it's quite possible. but it actually, rock is used a lot in the Book of Psalms.
Okay.
You know, the chief cornerstone.
Yeah. For like building and masonry. Yeah. That's
construction
true.
Dimensions of stone. And part of the ongoing theme through the rest of Isaiah will be the rebuilding of the Holy Land. Not so much giving direction as to, you know, build your houses by 10 by 10 cubits or something,
right?
But rebuilding the relationship with God and the worship life, the corporate worship life.
I know, like I said, I was kind of struck by that language. I really kind of like it. Look to the rock from which you were hewn to the quarry from which you were dug. Like I said, we have tons of seed related imagery and plant life and like, but I don't know. I'm kind of like the change of no. You're a boulder.
Well,
it's kind of cool.
Which lasts a lot longer.
Oh sure.
Than any of the plant life.
Yeah. But then it's juxtaposed with kind of this. It's not a full genealogy, but it's like a genealogy reference, and because they kind of reiterate the same phrase, but instead of rock imagery, it's actual people's names.
Yeah.
Look to your father, to Abraham, your father, and to Sarah, who bore you. That's
and
the quarry.
That's a metaphor, since it's been hundreds of years since those that folks actually lived.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't expect everyone to know their Bible well enough to realize, yeah, that they weren't actually their parents.
Right. Yeah. 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 But
they were long ago and far away.
Right. But descendants of.
Yeah.
Like believed to be descendants of.
Well, and they're not so worried about blood lineage as spiritual lineage.
Right.
Blood lineage.
The promise that was given to Abraham is the promise that you are inheriting. You
get to claim.
Yeah, exactly.
And humans historically have, both scripturally and in other cultures, became more concerned about the blood heritage than the scriptures are concerned with.
I'm also a little curious about this language here in 3. He will comfort all her waste places. So the Lord, for the Lord will comfort Zion. So we're talking about Zion. We're talking about, how would you describe the difference between Zion and Israel? Is Zion like, the idea is like, this is the space?
Yes.
And Israel is the people?
No.
Okay.
I should have said sometimes. They're, unfortunately for us people today, the word Israel was used, what immediately comes to mind, is at least 3 different ways. There was Jacob being renamed Israel, and anyone descended from Jacob could claim a piece of that name.
Okay.
There was the kingdom of Israel, which existed at the same time as the kingdom of Judah, and together they made up the Jewish kingdoms.
Right. You said 3.
I said 3.
And then the people. Okay.
The population, the Jewish people. And then, 4th one is the more modern concept of Israel
as a
nation,
that
began long before Israel was established in the 1940s.
Gotcha. So essentially you have an individual, you have a group of individuals, and you have a piece of land that has borders that existed at 2 different periods of time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. In different places with different shapes, somewhat different places, somewhat different shapes.
Yeah. And Jerusalem was always, I believe, was always in Israel. Or was it in Judah? I don't know. I'm just back from vacation.
There you go.
Google it.
Yeah. I need a good map overlay. It was over here. You know, Israel here. So Zion is more of a reference to land, right? Like, is more of a...
It depends on the poet.
Okay. What about this poet?
It is the people.
Oh, it is the people.
Yeah.
Okay. Because it refers to her waste places and her wilderness, like Eden. So I thought it was more land oriented.
Well, okay. The theology of the Hebrew scriptures is pretty consistent in that people are closely connected to the land.
Okay.
Closely connected to their human bodies. Not the Greek, it's a concept up in the sky.
Gotcha. But,
and so it's almost artificial to make the divisions we did a few minutes ago.
Okay. Gotcha. So they're more. So then, what are her waste places? Like, is it like, is there a reference? Is this like the author being like, we all know who we're talking, who or where we're talking about. We all know that tire fire portion of the land, or dumpster fire portion of the people. because I thought a lot of it was desert.
Well, it. Yes and no. There's Israel has the Holy Land along the Mediterranean coast had all sorts, historically, it's had all sorts of very developed cities and agricultural activities. irrigation was one of the techniques used way far back. And so it really wasn't until you got east of Jerusalem that you got to desert.
Okay.
And even there, it was not a Sahara desert type, but there was enough stuff growing that people could herd sheep and camels and stuff out there.
I gotcha.
It did have an economic value.
I'm looking up a map online while we're talking too. That's so detailed. It's not helpful at this size. Or desert like the garden of the Lord. So there's this cool reference back to the concept of Eden.
Yeah.
Which would have had again would have been a social concept or like a religious social concept, not a. Oh, you mean that place 70 clicks southwest of here?
Yeah, not at all that.
That could be a whole common belief is Eden was not a physical place.
The story of Eden, even though it's printed very early on in Bibles,
mm-hmm.
is actually a fairly compared to the rest of the Old Testament, the rest of the Hebrew Scriptures, is a relatively young story.
Yeah, yeah.
Just
for any literalists listening.
Yeah.
We don't go that way. Let's see here. Sorry, I was trying to come back to where I was at. So I will bring near my deliverance swiftly. My salvation has gone out, and my arms will rule the peoples. This is since this is earlier on in third Isaiah. This might be while they're traveling back.
Well,
they get back.
Now it's a pretty big group of people, so it's not like it would be. Okay, everyone get in the van. We're going back.
Right.
So there'll be some people that have been back for years while others are still
coming back. Okay. So then what if third Isaiah is kind of like post release from the Babylonians.
It's somewhat post release, but it's also, you got to keep in mind, the Babylonians are collapsing as their empire. Well beyond Babylonia, is being pressured by other empires.
Yeah. And okay.
So that was what it was no longer becoming economically prudent to keep anyone enslaved who might rise up internally in revolt.
I was just kind of curious with if they were being released and allowed to go back to their homeland, what deliverance this might be referring to, since. Like that language, that's the reason why I thought it might be two, because it would the deliverance in my mind would then be the deliverance from essentially their captivity in Babylonia and this promise of being delivered back home. But if that is already in the process of being fulfilled, then what deliverance are we talking about here in Third Isaiah?
Same thing.
The completion of.
Well, it's not.
I suppose that's not, just being let go isn't enough. And you have to, like, a lot of Third Isaiah is talking about restoring and restoration and return to prominence.
Well, and one of the things to keep in mind is even though the slavery that they experienced in Babylonia was not as bad as the slavery that African Americans experienced prior to the Civil War, it was still pretty bad.
Sure.
And so, like, cross-referencing with the Book of Lamentations, there are lamentations about the women being raped.
Right.
And in Psalms about, how can we sing the songs of the Lord by the waters of Babylon?
Right.
So it was terrible to be there.
Yeah.
And life on a daily basis was dangerous and terrible. So it's quite a deliverance to get to leave, and as we all probably know in this day and age, post-traumatic stress injury is going to be ongoing.
Yeah, it takes
so that'll be part
time
of,
to manage it. Yeah.
Well, that, you know, they didn't have that concept, but maybe 100 years from now, it'll be translated to something along those lines. So it's, they've been in a terrible place. It's thoroughly damaged them, and God is comforting them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know, I like the way that this ends. It kind of, in my mind, even though it's not the same language, it reinvokes some of the rock-related imagery that we have at the beginning. Maybe intentionally, maybe it's just the way that, because since this is a curated subsection, maybe it's just my mind looking for the pattern. But verse 6 really does then kind of reinvoke how the rock coming from the quarry, you know, for the writer's purposes, that's going to last, you know, seemingly forever. Like that's a long lasting, kind of product and, of, mm-hmm. you know, a giant rock, that you get hewn
this
from.
Rock's getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah. Right. But in verse 6, it talks about how, you can imagine the rock of Israel, outlasting things like, you know, the heavens will vanish like smoke, the earth will wear out like a garment, and those who live on it will die like gnats, but my salvation will be forever and my deliverance will never be ended. They already have this invoked imagery of like, hey, remember that promise that God made Abraham and Sarah way long ago, and yet it's still going?
Yep.
Just carry that thought forward. That's kind of what the author is saying. Like, that's, it's, you know, everything will fall by the wayside before this, you know, and this promise will still remain, and God's love will still, God's presence will still be there. So it's kind of a cool, kind of an eternity, language here.
Yeah. And part of what this invokes is the scriptural concept that time is a mystical experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that, yes, 150 years from now, this is what life will be like. It's instead, simultaneously, all that has taken place in the past exists with us now.
Yep.
And now exists. And the future already exists.
Hmm.
And it's so not a Western concept.
Right.
But that is the cosmological construct that the authors of the Hebrew Scriptures lived with perhaps the exception of a couple writers in the Apocrypha who were heavily influenced by Greek philosophy.
Hmm.
But it's a non-linear time concept.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Well, let's move on to Psalm 138.
One last thing.
I was going to say, I saw it on your face. Like,
yeah.
No, there's one thing I want to say.
The 3 and 4
mm-hmm.
and 5, well, it all starts to pop up after that, is a linking, is an intentional linking of God's revelation throughout existence that draws people out of their current suffering into a sense of the eternal.
Gotcha.
Especially around their identity.
Hmm.
That they're not recently released slaves. They are the descendants of Abraham and Sarah.
Gotcha.
They are mighty boulders. And so it's very much trying to help people heal from the ways in which they have been abused during their enslavement.
Hmm. Okay. Well, yeah. Let's,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. Let's move on to Psalm 138, which is 8 verses here. I give you thanks, O Lord, with my whole heart. Before the gods, I sing your praise. I bow down toward your holy temple and give thanks to your name for your steadfast love and your faithfulness. For you have exalted your name and your word above everything. On the day I called, You answered me. You increased my strength of soul. All the kings of the earth shall praise you, O Lord, for they have heard the words of your mouth. They shall sing of the ways of the Lord, for great is the glory of the Lord. For though the Lord is high, he regards the lowly, but the haughty he perceives from far away. Though I walk in the midst of trouble, you preserve me against the wrath of my enemies. You stretch out your hand, and your right hand delivers me. The Lord will fulfill his purpose for me. Your steadfast love, O Lord, endures forever. Do not forsake the work of your hands. Do we know anything about Psalm 138?
It's considered to be pretty darn old.
Okay.
There's a couple ways to see this. One is, is verse 1, second part of it, before the gods I sing your praise.
I was going to ask, gods plural.
Yeah. What? That's a very ancient construct of reality.
Mm.
And lots of ways it currently is interpreted and has been for centuries.
Mm.
There's some rabbis who said this refers to God's court.
Mm. Okay.
So later writings may have expressed a similar thought by saying, before the angels, I sing your voice.
Gotcha. Okay.
Others say no.
Others might say this is in the face of the gods of those that surround me and standing as kind of
the foreign nations.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay.
And let's see.
Yeah, but which one's right, Bruce?
Okay, here it is. So in 138:4, all the kings of the earth shall praise you, O Lord, for they have heard the words of your mouth. They shall sing of the ways of the Lord, for great is the glory of the Lord. That is to be paired with verse 1, where the author of the psalm is ahead of even the kings, the earthly kings.
Yes.
And gets to have the role of telling the gods of these foreign kings, you ain't so great.
Right. Yeah.
This is before I agree with the interpretation that this psalm is so old. It's before monotheism became such a exclusive construct of supernatural life that there was room to say, those people believe in those gods and they do something.
Right. Maybe they exist.
Yeah. But really all they can do is make cotton grow.
Right.
Beyond that, no.
Right. No, I gotcha.
It's like, I'll give those foreign kings benefit of the doubt. They have a god. Mm-hmm. But, lousy god.
Right. Yeah.
Ours is so much better.
Right. I was also struck that, by the way, verse 7 reads similarly to something that maybe that we know and that we say a lot. Though I walk in the midst of trouble, you preserve me against the wrath of my enemies. You stretch out your hand and your right hand delivers me. Really does kind of feel like though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I feel no evil. Anything to that or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There's no way to know since we don't get to check the sticky notes the author had.
Sure.
While writing. But yeah, it's so close that it's, I had one Bible professor would say, clearly it's in conversation with Psalm
3. I like that. That actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also liked, I'd be curious to know if there's another way to translate it, but in verse 3, you increased my strength of soul.
Yeah, I was curious about that too, but I'd already forgotten it. Okay, let me see. Before I put my foot in it, let me make sure. I mean, what I'm looking at is a Hebrew Bible, so it reads opposite from
Right.
An English Bible.
It reads right to left.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I'm sure, helped by dyslexia.
Right. That looks normal. Okay. In the day when I cried out and you answered me and made me bold in my soul through your name, your word.
Hmm.
That's a word for word. The only thing I added was through to make it make sense in English.
Gotcha. I like the word bold, though.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. And okay. Yep. Go for it.
And the term that is commonly translated as soul is the same word as life. Because Jewish faith, Old Testament vocabulary, does not have a word for soul. Hebrew does not have a word for soul. That's a Greek concept. So
right.
It came after Hebrew. And but the English translators in English wanted to give a sense of this is more than just your 70 years walking on earth.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And in Hebrew, it's your life force, a person's life force that by the end of the Hebrew scriptures is eternal.
Cool. Very cool. Anything else about Psalm 138?
Yeah.
All right. Well, then we'll move on to our gospel reading this week. The gospel reading comes from Matthew chapter 16, verses 13 through 20. So another 8 verse reading.
Yeah.
So we're just full of them today.
So to speak.
Now, when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" And they said, "Some say John the Baptist, but others Elijah, and still others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets." He said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter answered, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." And Jesus answered him, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter. On this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." Then he sternly ordered the disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah. In a way, kind of a weird interaction.
Truly.
I mean, at first blush, it starts off with like, it kind of almost feels like Jesus is like, "Tell me about myself." You know what I mean? Like, almost, you're almost kind of like, is this like vanity? Or like, you know, what's going on here? Like, you know, the way it's at least written here in Matthew, one imagines like they enter into the town and Jesus suddenly like whips around like, "What do people say about me? Tell me." You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Just kind of out of the blue. And then so all these different answers, which is kind of funny because John, you know, some say John the Baptist. I don't know who those people are, because clearly, at least in all the gospel writings, Jesus and John the Baptist at least occur in passing at the same time. So anybody who'd seen John the Baptist would know, well, that's not this guy.
Well, they didn't think it was the same guy.
Yeah.
It was John the Baptist was killed very close to the time where Jesus began his public ministry.
Oh, okay.
So it was more Jesus is continuing to carry the divine inspiration
that John the Baptist was. Gotcha. So like the new leader of the John Baptists.
It's kind more of mystical than that.
More mystical. It really, second incarnation.
Yeah.
Because obviously Elijah would be, that would be a second coming of Elijah.
Yeah.
I'm perplexed a little bit by Jeremiah.
Well, he was a favorite.
He was a prophet, right? So.
Yeah. And Matthew and Luke both have that.
Okay.
Mark does not. Again, Mark's the oldest.
Uh-huh.
But Jeremiah was definitely a favorite prophet in the time of Jesus, a favorite book of the Bible,
mm-hmm.
In part because he gave hope to the thoroughly oppressed by the Romans people of Jesus's time.
Hmm.
Plus, he's fascinating. I mean,
it's
easy for me to imagine at any time in Judeo-Christian history in which people were paying attention to scripture that Jeremiah would be a favorite to read.
Yeah.
It's action-packed.
And as far as like one of the prophets, in a way that that is still a position held by many, many within Judaism, that he was a prophet of sorts.
Oh, yeah.
I think that
Jeremiah.
No, Jesus.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. Yes.
Both
within Judaism and within Islam.
Yeah. Yeah.
That he was a prophet. Yeah. So this does make sense when you put it in that context.
Right. Exactly. But then he almost like, I'm not sure if he like dismisses the answers. Like, no, that's not what I cared about. What I care about is what you think. And I'm like, well, that you didn't ask that, Jesus. at least that's the way it reads when in this translation with the word "but." But who do you say I am?
Yeah. And
I think in one of the other gospels it actually says, "And who do you say I am?" Which makes a little bit more sense of like I wanted to know both of these things. Out of curiosity, in Matthew it reads as though like no, I don't care about that. What do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting. The Hebrew actual word is not say. The fancier way is who do you pronounce me to be?
Okay.
So it's almost. I like that one because it's like okay, if you talk about me as someone that people should pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just the gossip thing, but it's you're preaching.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you say I am?
Right.
And yeah, so it to me is a much heavier question than just what do the gossips say?
Right.
And yes, Luke says does not have the but.
I gotcha. Uh-huh. Simon Peter is the one who steps up in this gospel reading. I think he does in the others as well. We'll pause.
Yes, all three.
All three. He's the one who comes forward and makes the statement.
Matthew, Mark, and Luke.
It does make me wonder if.
And John has sort of a different version.
Oh, does he? Okay.
In which Peter also steps up.
Yeah. In my head, it'd be, well, I shouldn't say in my head because I would imagine, I would like to know like exactly how this comes out. How this ends up.
It comes to be
because I can envision it two different ways. Either Simon Peter is like, I know the answer. Like the eager kid in class and like, ooh, I know the answer. Or like. Or maybe less obnoxious. The just like, hey, I feel very strongly about this, and I want you to know. Or do all the disciples kind of look at each other and be like, Simon Peter, you want to take this one?
Right.
you want to.
Everyone takes one step back except for Peter.
Simon has an answer. So I'd be kind of curious as to how much hesitation there is to give an answer. Just because like the way that the gospel writings occur, how this plays out is he hasn't really prompted them. Like they haven't fully had a full discussion about this until now. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
he's not, you know,
they in Matthew, they have had the experience of him calming the storm and walking across water.
Sure.
And feeding the thousands and tossing demons out of people.
Right.
I mean, so they've had a lot of data points.
They've had data points. Exactly. But as far as the what's been written, hasn't had the full-fledged discussion.
Right.
This has kind of been like, I'm showing you enough so that you can come to your own conclusions. But now I'm going to prompt you, like, I don't know. Yeah. Hey, Simon, what's your thesis? Like, yeah. You know, what's your idea here? And what do you think? And he does. I feel like this is the first time any of the disciples have said, like, oh, that we're following the Messiah. This is the Messiah. Surely he's the Messiah. This is like the surely he's the Messiah kind of point.
Yeah.
And then he gets awarded for this. I don't remember him being the son of Jonah, but you know,
it's part of
the lineage.
It's part of the David lineage.
Okay, David lineage. Got it.
There's a fancy word for saying it that won't come out.
Davidic lineage.
Yeah. Though in this case, it's also probably just Simon's dad's name.
Okay. Yeah. But I'm struck by the way that verse 17, with the way Jesus responds to him, this is kind of like you have said a phrase that indicates you see me and my purpose truly to its core.
Yeah.
And he responds back in such a way that feels very formal and kind of in recognition. You know, not only is there Jesus to Simon,
definitely.
Not only does he give him a blessing by saying, "Blessed are you," and so there's like an acknowledgement of like, "Oh, you know, bless your heart."
Yeah,
but it is formal as like, you know, kind of like an "I see you, Simon, son of Jonah," and blessed
you know
are you
you're
as
in
a result.
Trouble when someone uses your first and last name,
or invokes the name of your father.
Yeah, and this was the closest they had to last names at the time was son of.
Right.
Your dad.
Right. And I like this phrase here, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. And the way that I personally interpret that is this isn't something that would be inherently known to you as a human.
Right.
And the revelation that you are having is only because God has opened this to you.
Yep.
And the things that you have seen me do are not of my flesh and blood status, mm-hmm. but the deity portion of me. You know what I mean? That these aren't things that humans do.
Right. Right.
This is not powers. Don't think that like we're on, you know, in more modern times, like this isn't the beginning of the X-Men. You know what
right.
I mean? Like we're evolving and you know, people are going to start being born with the power to walk on water.
That's a good way to put it.
Something different. And it is interesting. The language here is definitely used in the tail end of the verse or this section is used to establish Peter's prominence within the church that will be built.
Right.
But go ahead.
I was just going to say formed might be a better term.
Gotcha.
Just to be clear, we're not
right.
talking about a building.
True. But I choose to interpret this, at least now in this moment, to be more of a, rather than the person, that he's building like the rock upon which my church is going to be built and that who will hold the kingdom's keys to of the kingdom of heaven isn't you as an individual, but the words you just said, that is the cornerstone. That's the chief, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it does seem kind of strikes me as somewhat odd that Jesus is having this, you know, this discussion about like, this comes from the Father. This is, you know, not part of flesh and blood. And then turn around and be like, but you, flesh and blood, are going to hold the keys to the kingdom. You know what I mean? It kind of strikes as like, that's also really not what Jesus has, his whole ministry is kind of about. It really is more this conceptual change, this tonal change of, you know, spirituality and religion. And so I'm kind of interpreting it, at least in this moment, of like, it's not Peter the man who's the rock, but your the faith that you have just expressed, the mindset that you have, and the way that you now think, that right there that you're embodying in this moment, Peter, that is the rock of my of this.
Yes, but.
No, I get it.
Yeah, you. I think you're completely right on all those counts, but Scripture is incarnational in its view of humanity. So those things cannot exist independently of a human being.
Okay.
Independently of a human being expressing them.
Right.
And experiencing them and expressing them. So it's important not to get too much into our heads about it. And instead realize that, yes, this was Peter really did have this in him, but so do a lot of other people.
Right.
And part of our task as we grow as Christians is to see what pieces of it are we called to carry.
Right.
To make the church be what it should be. And that's the part that in this day and age where there's such a cynicism, understandably, about institutions and churches, that's the part I think is hardest for modern humans to participate in, because they're used to having so much of their life outside of their existence and seen at a distance that, for instance, church is at most one day a week.
Yeah.
Where and what Jesus is trying to say here is, no, it's all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. But we often, and this section ends in a way, a familiar way. He then and uses the word sternly.
Yes.
Which is a very English term, so I'm sure it has some other meaning, but like, I think the gist of it is probably well conveyed. Ordered the disciples not to tell anyone he was the Messiah. And it does kind of seem odd when you think about it. Like, and we've talked several times about how ridiculous the request is in during many miracles. Like, he'll heal someone and be like, don't tell anybody. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe that was just because, like, you know, they couldn't possibly. But again, in this moment, as I'm reading it now, there does seem to be a reason why. And
there is.
It is because, at least in my mind, it's because of what just happened, which is like a personal revelation.
Yeah.
So to me, Jesus is telling him, like, now don't just go and tell people what the answer is. They have to experience this, and that the meaning of it is lost if you're just instructed.
Right.
You don't have this personal revelation. So don't steal that from someone, because I'm here now and there's time left for personal experiences. You can tell them the answer later, but right now, let me have personal experiences with everyone that I meet, because those people who have the personal engagement and the personal revelation of like, this, you know, this, I think this guy's the Messiah, you know, that those people will be, have a much more meaningful experience and revelation and connection as a result than just being told, hey, there's this guy and his name's Jesus. He's the Messiah. You should go see him.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what I mean?
And part of it will then, as Jesus talks about, teaches about, it'll be folks, okay, Next week.
Yeah. Yeah. Got it. Jesus. His name's Jesus. Messiah. Son of God. Performing miracles down there. By the way. Okay. Tuesday looks good. Is he going to be around? Like, you know what I mean? Like just. Yeah. So I don't know. I think. So that's kind of how. Like this. This writing here kind of is currently informing me as to maybe the reason why Jesus was saying, don't tell anybody. Not that it worked, because it usually doesn't, you know, because how could you? How could you not tell anybody?
Well,
hey, remember how I was blind? Don't ask. Don't ask. Let's not get into that right now. I'm not supposed to tell you, really?
It must have been a really odd time to be a daily follower of Jesus.
Right. And who knows? Maybe it was really the human side of him was like, don't spoil it for me. My human side really gets a kick out of watching their face light up. Like, just don't spoil this for me. I really enjoy that.
Well, part of it, the scripture itself tells part of the answer. Right after this, Jesus tells them about having to go to Jerusalem, be tortured, crucified, and be raised from the dead. That this is the first time they're hearing this is the end game.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And so Peter says, no.
Yeah.
Bad plan. You're the Messiah.
Right.
Why bother with that stuff?
Yeah.
So it that's one of the reasons not to say anything is they can't comprehend it enough to say it accurately.
Yeah.
And the general way of putting it is, none of this really makes sense until after the resurrection.
Right. Right. And I would say, let's see here. Is that this coming week? It is. So we won't go into it. We'll save it for next week. But I already have thoughts about then how that then informs it, because that would change the dynamic and change the way that it might occur.
Yeah. And after that is the transfiguration.
Where
again, they're told not to say anything, but it's like, okay, they're still not getting this God. What do we do?
Yeah.
Okay, let's throw them some Moses.
Yeah, but and we can talk about it more next week, but what it really is like, it's kind of like that concept of that we see in movies today about time travel. Like you can't mess with it. Which is essentially, Jesus isn't time traveling, but if you know what's going to happen, the burden is still the same of like, well, if you mess with it, then you know what I mean? So in a way he's protecting the timeline, but like, don't tell people I'm the Messiah, because it could change the timeline.
Yes, that is true. That I haven't thought about it that way. That is a good way to explain it.
Jesus Christ, time traveler. Next week. Next week on the podcast. Well, with that, we'll call to a close this year podcast for August 27th, 2023, the 13th Sunday after Pentecost. And as always, we encourage you to join us in worship, however it works for you and your weekend. Please come share with us in worship on Sunday, 8 and 10 o'clock in person. We'll have the 11:30 town hall meeting afterwards. The 10 o'clock service will be broadcast live on our YouTube channel, HFEC Videos, and will be available for enjoyment thereafter. And until next week, I'm Ben.
And I'm Bruce, and I am your guide on time traveling every Sunday during the Eucharist. Ask me about it.
Oh, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.